As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Listen, we look forward to playing. The challenge of playing the Bucks, we know they're a heck of a football team. So we're not sure where we're going to play, but wherever we need to go, we'll go. We'll get ourselves ready for that. And when the league announces it, then we'll go ahead and move forward in that direction. But right now we know nothing. So it could be in Tampa, it could be there. My heart goes out to the people in Tampa. I haven't quite followed and know how much it's hit and or going to hit, but from what I heard, it sounds like it's going to be quite a deal. But our hearts and prayers go out to the people there. Anyways, for that time, yours.
To say that this week for the Kansas City Chiefs and those of us who cover them has been hectic might be a little bit of an understatement. To say that this week has been a hurricane would be a little bit too on the nose. So we'll find somewhere in the middle here on today's edition of Time's Ours. I'm Joshua Briscoe, alongside Nate Taylor. Seth Kaiser is not with us today. He'll be back for Monday's show, I imagine, and has a great piece up in the newsletter that we will look back to as we go. But Nate, we found out officially today, to do a little weather report first, I suppose, you are not going to Minnesota for this game, as you may have once been planning to do. Mm-hmm. You're going to Tampa, which is usually, I imagine, a wonderful destination. I love Tampa, and I'll give a little weather report on the ground there that I've got shortly. But this is probably not the sort of mid-season kind of working vacation that you might like to see when you enter Florida in September.
Yeah, and you know, there were several conversations where, look, thought I was going to be driving up I-35, guys. I really thought me and the fam was going to get a bonus weekend. Obviously, we hope that, and I haven't read a ton of coverage, because obviously there's going to be more details as we get further away from what happened over the last 2 days, but hopefully, you know, I haven't read if there's been a ton of casualties, but hopefully, you know, Lord willing, everybody was safe and that, you know, our lives is obviously what matters most. With that said, the Chiefs will go to Tampa Bay. They will play the Buccaneers in primetime in a stadium that may or may not be full of people. And the humidity and the weather is going to be interesting to sort of watch. I got to talk to Tommy Townsend today, Josh, about the breeze.
Yes.
That is naturally in the stadium. So I don't know what the aftermath of a tropical storm rolling through the region will do, but it's interesting that the news came out that the Buccaneers were going to host their home game instead of moving this to Minneapolis. During sort of the media availability time for us to talk to people on the team. So, you know, the Chiefs went to practice today fully aware that they were going to stay in Tampa Bay. So there is some clarity in that. Although we'll see structurally how much this makes sense moving forward, because I think a large segment of Tampa doesn't have, you know, this thing called electrical power. Yeah. So hopefully it all works out on Sunday. And, you know, I'm not sure if we need to be working round the clock for a football game after a tropical storm, but that's what the NFL has decided to do.
That part there is the one thing that gets stuck in my craw just a little bit is, hey, are we in? And I don't know. The answer to this might be affirmative to say, like, or maybe in the negative, I guess, to say, hey, is there anything else that these people could be doing to maybe try to make sure this state and the surrounding cities are in a good space right now? Or any thought that maybe this is not where we'd want to dump our resources on a football game? Those are questions I've been asking the last couple of days. My inside reporting is that a few years ago, my family moved down to actually Treasure Island, Florida, which is just a kind of off Tampa, off on an island on the bay side. And for a little bit, it looked like that whole place was going to be totally underwater. And ultimately, they ended up being extremely lucky. The hurricane made its path go farther south, which is also that sort of southern trajectory that it branched off on is the reason that this game has the possibility of being in Tampa. I think if it would have stayed on its original line, the city of Tampa Bay would have been devastated. The infrastructure there is a lot of older buildings and things. Mm-hmm. It would have been devastating for that region. And so it goes a little south, and it seems like Tampa proper is doing pretty good. Tampa St. Pete area. Again, my family went back to their house today after evacuating and found very minimal damage, which is a miracle on that front. But those spaces farther south, so we can be clear, if anybody hasn't seen the videos or anything, a huge chunk of some of those, especially smaller communities down south of Tampa, are underwater. I mean, the storm surges of water of 10 feet. The video of a shark in the street swimming, not a Photoshop this time. Apparently it's for real. Just very, very actively thinking about everybody who has been affected by that. And like I said, Nate, I don't know what any of the figures are on anything or what the extent of that's going to be. But if you are within earshot of anybody who lives in that area, there are people who are legitimately fearful that they will drive back to the location that their house used to be standing in,
right?
And would be no longer. So all of that is my little bit of hesitance along those lines of, I don't know if a football game needs to happen there right now, so they can just try to keep that community, try to dry it out in a very literal sense, and try to help some people that will need it. We'll see where that goes. But as you said, hey, NFL and the Bucks have said, we'll go ahead and take that game here.
Real quick, this is from the New York Times. More than 500 people had to be rescued from floodwaters in southwestern Florida by, as of this recording, Thursday afternoon, officials said. Now, it's gonna take a longer time to get what possibly might be the death toll, but just the idea that 500 people had to be rescued by Thursday afternoon, when obviously it was, I think, a category 4 when it reached landfill a few days ago. Now, here's what the NFL will try to do, and they've done it in the past to some success and to some disappointment. And I wanted to make this note before we moved on, Josh. The league will try to raise relief efforts, which is all good and dandy. That is probably something you're going to see throughout the telecast of Sunday night's game. I think the NFL clearly wanted the game to still be in primetime for obvious football reasons, but now in the aftermath of this, we'll try to do the best it can to help, you know, people, to help encourage people to donate. I don't know which organizations yet. And then the NFL, one would assume, will do its part to help out in some financial manner. So from a broadcast element, it will probably not look as normal as, like, you know, a regular Sunday night game, like, say, Denver last week. But they will try to make the best of it that they can, despite the fact that, yes, as I'm reading this, 2.5 million people are out of power.
Yeah. It has been a very strange week or so to just be getting updates from my mom to now you going through the stats to the Chiefs trying to get down there to play a football game.
But yeah.
That's what we know as we stand now. And I saw somebody on Twitter ask, because of the range where power is out, if Raymond James Stadium currently has power. I did not see an affirmative answer to that. I don't know that it's that it is out of power at the moment. I don't know it either way. But I thought that was an interesting question to ask.
Yeah.
As this all gets figured out.
Yeah, some of this is in the Orlando area, of course. So you're kind of going from from Fort Myers to Tampa to Orlando, is what I'm gathering. But yeah, that's a fair question to ask. Can the Jumbotrons at Raymond James Stadium light up right now?
Right. So there could be elements of that are certainly evolving over time. I think you're absolutely right. There will be some sort of fundraising element that goes in connection with that. I'll be curious to see exactly how that goes. I feel like the NFL usually does that with Red Cross sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just don't know what the next couple of days are going to look like. I don't really know exactly what these last couple of days have looked like to actually be on the ground there beyond a few pictures here and there. But with that being said, I guess we can talk about the actual game that may or may not happen, or the game that did already happen, because yesterday, not a whole lot that I would have brought back up for today's show. Today's pressers, however, Nate, you were out there for them. I was listening live from the radio station, and there were like a half dozen different places I think you could start from today. I would give you the entirety of the field from today's pressers for you to pick something you like, and I'll pick something different because we'll have plenty of options.
Yeah, for sure. You know, this is what I'm going to ultimately write about for The Athletic, but it's not every day, kids, where Dave Tope just answers question after question after question after question. I mean, we're still talking to this man. That's how bad Sunday was. And so I'm going to further dive into it. But for Dave Tope to basically have the respect and the trust from Andy Reid that, like, no, all calls made on special teams are basically Dave Tope. He making that very clear that, like, I recommend things to coach, and then coach, I guess, doesn't really push back, or that they have enough years together where, hey, that's his responsibility, and you want to try a fake field goal on 4th and 11, hey, that's you. So if that's the case, then the special teams coordinator acknowledges that is his responsibility. But there's stuff from Sunday's game, Josh, that is going to obviously have an impact on Sunday. One of them being, we have no idea if Harrison Puck is going to play against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He did not practice today, Thursday, although he did practice in a limited fashion on Wednesday. So we don't know if he's going to play. I'm going to give you as many notes as I possibly can on the new kicker, Matthew Wright, here in a minute. But also, a lot of these implications is going to be about, like, the whole season. Like, there are four core special teamers, Josh. You want to know who they are?
It's the kicker, punter, long snapper, and Chris LeMond.
Close. You're okay. 50, you're 50-50.
Alright.
I really believe it's Harrison Butker, Tommy Townsend, who, by the way, throughout all this chaos, is the offensive specialist of the month in the AFC. And
good start for the Chiefs. If you told me their punter is the player of the month.
The player of the month in the AFC. After all the 53 man options. Now, to be fair, Lamar Jackson is incredible this season.
Incredible.
Because he on my fantasy team. Now, with that being said, every time I look at the phone, I'm like, that man is out here getting money.
Doing it again.
Get that money, Lamar.
It should just be cash register sounds every time he scores. That should be what they play in the stadium.
So, the other two, I believe, are rookies. Isaiah Pacheco and Sky Moore. how they play on Sunday is obviously in response to how they played against the Colts. But a lot of the statistical value because of Dave Tope's style is going to come down to like how much these rookies develop and get better or stagnate, or what no one hopes is you don't want them to get worse. But the way he spoke about both of those guys will likely play, you know, a role to some degree as the season moves along.
And were you surprised by any of that today whenever he just sort of stood there and said, like, he's one of the guys. This is funny because of how we've talked about Steve Spagnuolo over the years. But like, mm-hmm. he's going to stick with his young guys. And that the worst thing you could do at that point is jump down their throats and shake their confidence. And everything that he kind of navigated through. Was any of that surprising to you? Or do you feel like that's Dave Tope doing Dave Tope things?
It's a little trickier with Sky Moore because usually you're going to take the punt in the middle of the playing field. But even he said he would still want Sky Moore to take a punt from the 8 versus having it bounce in the probability that, like, hey, maybe the other team downs it at the 1 or the 2-yard line, which of course happened on the second punt against the Colts. When it comes to Isaiah Pacheco, we have not really seen I don't think I've seen the potential. Have you? Do you think you've seen the potential? We all know he's fast.
Yeah, I just want to see big and fast have the ball in its hands. So that's where my patience stems from.
Okay, but the blocking has been kind of atrocious. And so that forces a rookie to say, "Well, I got to do it on my own," or "Oh, it's I got to put more on me because I got to make this man miss and this man miss and this man miss." And it's like, well, no, like not even David Hester nor Dante Hall were this good this early on as mm-hmm. special returners. It took them years to understand leverage, pacing, when to make moves, when to hit it and go. So for Pacheco, he needs real support from the blocking scheme, because if he has to make a decision that, you know what, I'm going to just turn left, even though the play doesn't tell me to go left, ain't none of these dudes blocking. Oh, wait, now I fell down. Because I tried to cut left way too hard. But Dave Tope basically said, keep returning it. And that might be to like the team's detriment for what, a couple weeks? Month? Sure. Before they like get in sync. So, you know, he's got some real coaching to do. And we don't really say that often with Dave Tope, mostly because he does have a veteran sort of established core in that special teams unit. They are usually one of the better, from a metric standpoint, in DVOA. And usually, he doesn't have to even worry about Harrison Butker because obviously he's healthy and he's one of the best kickers in the league. And so he's put a lot of emphasis on Tommy Townsend, which has bared some fruit so far. But I feel like, man, Dave Toe's going to have to coach a lot over the next month because all their flaws were sort of exposed against the Colts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm going to talk about Eric Bieniemy.
Here we go.
I'm actually more interested in talking about him today than I was on Monday's show. I guess we've, you know, kind of finally heard from him on this. And I don't have like all the quotes in front of me. I'm not going to throw the audio clips right now or whatever. And there was too much to tweet out. So I'm going to have to give you my feelings and let you all decide if you trust my interpretation. And Nate, you can, you know, confirm that I got at least some of this right. But here, my just big takeaway from the absolute deluge of questions that Bieniemy got about the Mahomes thing today. I really feel like Eric Bieniemy asserted himself really well throughout that entire process. And I asked, I'll tell you what, I'll put this out. I asked you about this before the show because this is something that I do not do very often. I'm pretty willing to give those dudes the benefit of the doubt. And I asked you before the show if there's anything that like I'm missing or whatever. We can kick it around here, of course, as well.
But right.
Whenever I am willing to take something more or less at face value, I immediately begin questioning why I'm doing that and if I'm about to be the mark, if I'm going to get got, right?
They got us, guys.
Right. Like, I mean, people know this. I don't have to explain this to anybody listening to this show, but like, I'm not just out here to just toe the party line or, you know, just say everything's all sunshine and roses and in fairy tale land. Like I saw that interaction with my eyes. And then I listened to all three of the dudes involved talk about it. And specifically today with Bienemy, he said the thing that you expected him to say, which is that's Pat. But he also says, that's what you want him to be. You want him. And I feel good because I feel like I said this on the postgame show on Sunday or on Monday or something. You want him to be the guy that's trying to drag you to the end zone even whenever you're pumping the brakes to be the conservative guy.
Right.
If that comes around, and as Bienemy said, and he made this clear, it's a good follow-up question. It might have been McDowell. I don't remember who asked it. But to say like, hey, you know, you were just the messenger on that, right? And Bienemy said essentially, yes, but he was the one that was in Mahomes' ear to make that decision. So then Mahomes comes over and he's chirping at Bienemy about it. That's really an Andy Reid target there. Even if Bienemy was given the choice to make that call, Andy Reid, as Bienemy even said again today about in the context of, I think, something else, I can't remember what, Andy Reid's got veto power whenever he gives up his 51% of the vote, which I don't know how often that happens. But he's got 51, which works for credit and blame and all of that. And I just really thought that over the course of everything today, I think Eric Bieniemy reinforced that what we saw was what we saw, but not more, if that makes sense. I was immediately thinking that it would probably get blown up to larger than what I thought it was as it happened in real time. And I'm still in that place now. Like, Patrick Mahomes might not text Eric Bieniemy for like, you know, dinner spots on the bye week. I don't know, but they're talking every single day. Mahomes mentioned that yesterday, like they didn't have to have a sit down about anything. And I just don't know why it would be a red flag for a disagreement about end of half aggressiveness to come out between some people who just honestly disagreed about what they wanted to do there. Like Patrick Mahomes wanted the ball in his hand, and Reid and Bieniemy wanted to get to the locker room and kind of recalibrate some things.
Yeah.
I would have sided with Mahomes there, but I don't think anybody was deeply in the wrong. And I really felt like Bieniemy handled it with quite a bit of grace today, I suppose.
Yeah, he sounds like a leader. He sounds like someone who can motivate through circumstance. Sounds like someone who, you know, had his reasons, was well thought out, and expressed his thoughts. You know what that sounds like, Josh?
Sounds like a head coach.
Sounds like a head freaking coach!
I'm glad that you went there, too, because one of the things he said today that I don't know that I've heard him speak about in that detail was to say, you have different players who can take different criticisms differently. And I think he said you want to know what buttons you can push, not what buttons not to push, which is the attitude. That is an attitude of a bleepster, of a coach, and that's absolutely what Eric Bieniemy is. Eric Bieniemy, I think, generally speaking, his strategy as a coach is that he's going to get under your skin and make you improve yourself because you're annoyed at what he's pointed out in you, perhaps. I don't know.
Right.
I'm really psychoanalyzing. But
he's, you know, Andy Reid, this is back in 2018, kids. Andy Reid empowered this man in a way that was truly like masterful, where in 2018, obviously Andy Reid was, you know, doing his thing, but one of these players was Matt Nagy.
Yep.
One of these players was Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy is known to get in that, you fill in the blank.
So he's
doing less of it in a public manner now, because he is sort of evolving or transforming or ascending to that sort of CEO leadership type, because that's what y'all want. But hey, everybody's got to progress and develop the way they want at their own sort of timing and pacing, if given the time to do that. And clearly Eric's been given the time to do that with Andy. But like, I'm just saying, behind them doors, he's still who he is, while also probably getting better at explaining, like, here's who I am, here's where I'm content, here's where I feel secure, and letting everybody know, like, no, he's wrong. Like, it's okay for Eric Bieniemy to be like, I was right, and Patrick was wrong, and here's why, you know? And he didn't spell it all the way out, but he did let everybody know that, like, this is literally my job, guys. Like, I can't, like, he nor Andy can just do what Patrick wants all the time. You know, right. that's not the way this is supposed to work. Now, Eric was not the same football player that Patrick Mahomes is. And isn't that part of why you want and value him as a coach? Because he has a different perspective on these things. And situationally, as he said, can I tell everybody what the best quote was from today beyond how he handled the Pat thing, Josh?
Sure, yeah.
This man said they kicked our ass.
Yes.
So we in the
multiple
middle of
times,
our,
I believe.
Yeah, we in the middle of getting our ass kicked, dog. Let's get the hell in the locker room and make some damn adjustments.
And you know what? I get it. And I get Mahomes wanting to take another shot because he knows he's Patrick Mahomes. Like, right. I get it. One other thing from all of that that I just...
Children, it's okay for adults to argue. It's okay.
Right. Okay. And it wasn't a top 50 all-time Mahomes Bieniemy disagreement. I'm pretty confident in that. Like, it just happened. If CBS's cameras wouldn't have lingered there for as long as they did, we never would have gotten to this point. And, not that they did anything wrong by sticking with it. I'm glad they got to see
it. Oh, of course.
It,
I was like... Please. Hey, can we follow them into the tunnels?
Yes. Yes. Hey, stay on them. Hey, track 15.
Stay on them. So the other thing too is, and I don't know, I didn't mention this Monday and I should have, but I didn't think about it. Cause we all tend to think like once the season starts, it's a new season. Like everything else is a wasteland behind it. I mean, if you don't think the AFC Championship game still kind of hovers over this, then you're foolish.
Sure.
Like, you know, we was at the one, and you know, psychologically really didn't help us. Now, did it? Mm-hmm. So we're at like the 36. It's 2nd and 20. Yeah, let's just hand this thing off. Like, we've gone through this before, but you've got no timeouts. You don't have Harrison Butker. You don't have Tyreek Hill. You know, so. Eric Bieniemy is right, and he sounded like someone who knew he was right when he talked to us today.
That's a good way of putting it. I ain't gonna leave it. The one other thing I was gonna say is just within the conversation about the button pushing and everything, he talked about being able to tailor that to different guys differently. And if there was one thing that I would have believed about Eric Bieniemy for a long time, it's just that sometimes you've got guys who are not here to be coached in the most confrontational way possible, which seems like that might kind of be Bieniemy's speed a lot of the time. And I would largely believe you on that. But the idea that at least at this point in his career, that he is realizing, if not already long ago realized, that you can't make the same flavor for every player, that to me feels like the hurdle to clear. And if he can actually, you know, coach in different ways. Those are conversations you're going to have in head coaching interviews. But he got asked right at the very end of the presser, you know, if some of that stuff is maybe you don't care, but do owners care? And he said,
yeah,
you'll have to ask some owners.
Mm-hmm.
And then the presser ended, which was a pretty good moment. We got like 5 or 6 sort of half serious, half awkward chuckles from him today. Blew the over under that I set at 1.5. I predicted that we'd get at least 2 good. I think we got like, I think the final score might have been 5. Just a really excellent performance in the pressers. As both Bieniemy and Tobe were like on the stand, and Steve Spagnuolo might as well have been doing a handstand. Like, it's just the only, if Chris Jones doesn't get that penalty, he also talked in the locker room after the fact, which was had some really interesting stuff. But if Chris Jones hadn't gotten that penalty, I really do feel like Spags could have come out there and just stood on top of the podium. That would have been within his rights.
Yeah. And was just like, hey, Who wants to ask me about blitzing today? Because we're so good at it. Oh, man.
Spags presser. Real quick on the Chris Jones front, it was in the locker room, so I heard the audio because 810's own Todd Lebo was back there, and he and Vahe Gregorian of the Star were the two that were kind of peppering Chris Jones with some stuff, and I thought it was the most open and straightforward Jones has been on all of that before. The crux of one of his answers, first of all, he rattled off the taunting article by like line whatever. Article, whatever, section, whatever. He had that off the top of his head. And the one thing he talked about, which I feel really good about because I've been screaming about this for several days now, is he said, they've got to give us a clear understanding of what we can and cannot say. Mm. That's a direct quote. Give us a clear understanding of what we can and cannot say.
Makes sense.
That was the most recent part of all of this that actually made me angrier now than I was on Sunday after all of these little like half reports have come out and everything. I said this on the radio show today, but it's like getting pulled over for speeding, and you say, "Hey, well, how fast was I going? What's the speed limit here? I didn't see any signs."
Ooh.
And the cop says, "Yeah, well, here's your ticket. I can't tell you even that, unfortunately." Well, that is uninformative for your people, right? Like, if you want to make an example out of Chris Jones because he said something heinous, fine, but you've got to at least point to specifically what he said. If you're going to say this is consistently unacceptable, you got to point it out. The NFL does this with flags everywhere else.
Yep.
You throw a flag, you say what the penalty was and who did the thing. If Patrick Mahomes throws a 75-yard touchdown and a ref comes out and says, hold on, let me get this right.
Okay, flag comes out. Let's get the speaker box going.
Wait. Flag comes out, ref walks out, turns on his microphone. 15-yard penalty on the offense, replay, first down. And just leaves?
Hey,
that is not acceptable.
What number?
I need to know, was it holding? Who did it? I need to know, was someone offside? Was there a personal foul? Did someone say a naughty word? Whatever it is, if you are just sentencing, again, I'm getting real extreme in the things here. I sentenced you to 4 years in prison. Oh my God, for what? Unfortunately, I can't tell you that right now. I'm not willing to do that.
It was abusive language, and I have no further comments.
Like, at the best case scenario is the NFL could come out and say, you know what? We don't think it's important for other people to learn from this. We just wanted to punish Chris Jones and the Chiefs on that drive for what Chris Jones did. They could say that, but that's not what these rules are for. Like, this is ideally the point of things like tickets and letting you off with a warning or whatever, is so you don't repeat the negative behavior that creates a more civil society, generally speaking. We're not all doing 85 on Metcalf. Like, that's because we all know that there's a speed limit, and if you forget, they put a new sign out every once in a while. Like, that really has grown to irk me.
Yeah, that's a great comparison because, obviously I wasn't there, today. But or for that specific conversation, but yeah, like you just, no one wants to say what he said, including the man who said it, but hopefully he has a better understanding now. But as I'm saying that, I'm like, does he?
He said he will not be he will not be speaking to Thomas Brady. So the two of them have a little bit of a little bit of chatter history.
Hey, good luck with that.
Good point.
Someone sees some tape tendencies and is like, let me start exploding.
Oh, man. God, if Brady draws,
he's going to try. He's going to try.
Absolutely.
He ain't a legend for a reason. He's a legend because he's a legend. Hey, did you see what I did to Marcus Lattimore? See, I'm going to say something, and then you're going to say something, and then Mike Evans is going to get in the way, and he's going to completely, like, boil over from that. But I'm saying
get my Evans out of there. I mean, if there's a little one for one, I don't think I'd trade Chris Jones for Mike Evans in this game straight up. I think Chris Jones is more important. But at least it's like in chess. Sometimes you go take the bishop, even though it's going to cost you your rook. I don't know if that's good chess math or not. I'm not very good at chess, but those are two pieces that I can think of. Sometimes you make those moves, and I'll tell you what, if Chris Jones could get Tom Brady ejected, I think it might be worth it.
Ooh, that's never going to happen.
Not in a million years. Tom Brady could commit murder on the field with his bare hands, premeditated. He could be confessing to it on a live microphone that's going out over a half full Raymond James Stadium because this game is happening inside a natural disaster.
Right.
And he would not get spent or thrown out.
So just want to make it clear, guys. He may hold that card all four quarters. And if you think Matt Ryan got away with one.
Oh, God.
Don't let Tom Brady get a chance, Chris. Like, you know, it was funny. I can't remember if it was Todd Lebo or not, but someone asked Creed Humphrey, "Hey, how much you chitting and you chattering before and after the snap?"
Yes.
And Creed was like, "No, I don't talk.
Yeah.
My biceps talk."
Right.
I don't talk after the play. I just get back in the huddle. Usually I'm dominating another man who's looking, you know, above at me. But then I just give it to the next play, guys. I don't really say anything.
As we are recording this live, we can make this our segue back to the Buccaneers, I suppose, that the Chiefs just tweeted out. One of these names got added, although a lot of you guys were tweeting this at practice. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Harrison Butker, and Ronald Jones did not practice today. Mike Dana and Mecole Hardman were limited. MVS was, I think he was limited yesterday, if memory serves.
Looking at it now, good radio. He was limited yesterday.
So it was a late little jangle there, and Reed said, the Chief said, Andy Reid obviously wasn't the one giving the injury report today. The Chief said today, I believe, that Dana, I thought they said that Dana and Butker would be the two that didn't practice, but Dana was limited and MVS didn't practice. I mean, Ronald Jones we knew wasn't going to be there either. They might have just said Jones and Butker. Remember?
Yeah.
Good radio.
It's fine. All you need to know is that Juju, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Mecole Hardman are on the injury report. So we'll see how much Mecole Hardman can do. Andy flat out said yesterday on Wednesday, yeah, he probably shouldn't have been out there.
Yep.
Like if you heard the quote or you read it or sort of in between, what he was ultimately alluding to was that, like, he wasn't as serviceable as we thought he would be in Sunday's game against the Colts. And look, Valdes-Scantling is trending in the wrong direction. So we'll see if he practices Friday. But hey, maybe this is what Seth kind of wants. Like,
because there's going to be no choice but to put Sky Moore out
Sky
there.
Moore!
Great, fantastic. You know what? I'll be the guy that takes the other side on this one. I'm not trying to force anybody onto the field in this offense right now. I would like to force guys onto the field who are going to be nice pass catchers, who get a little bit of space, who are going to be where Patrick Mahomes wants them to be. That's all I've got.
Okay, I've got Travis Kelce and Juju Smith-Schuster, who has been a full participant these last two practices with a shoulders injury.
Sky Moore, once he's out there, I'll be looking for 24. You know, I'm excited when it gets there. I just would like to see everybody be healthy. I'm nervous.
Hey. I mean, quiet revenge game for Justin Watson. They didn't want me no more.
Wow, the Justin Watson game.
They didn't want me no more.
Love this. This is huge. Hey, Ronald Jones, get your stomach right or whatever and get active.
Yeah.
Rojo revenge game would be nice. I don't think he's going to be active.
Not looking that way right now. But, you Maybe know, these could change. Yeah, so, you know, now, I think this may be the point, too. And again, this is sort of projecting later in the week. But let's say Mecole is limited Friday, just as he was today. The next game is probably more important. I know you don't want to say that out loud. But you look at the schedule and you say, next game's probably more important. And, you know, you ain't got to run these routes on some swampy fields because, you know, hurricane. I hope, for as much talk as, like, Chiefs fans can have, if they go through another game where there's some poor field play,
oh, man. This team is 3-0 if the Cardinals' grass works. I mean, that's just what it is. Like,
I mean,
Harrison Butker and Trent McDuffie play against the Colts.
And this is why this is partly why I'm writing about special teams today, is like, we don't know what the field conditions are. We hope it's suitable. They'll do the best they can. I'm not acting like, the Buccaneers are going to be like nefarious or anything like that. But like, it is not a normal prep week because Mother Nature.
Yeah, it's not normal. It's not a normal week for the grounds crew. Yeah, that's a good point.
And the team is flying back from Miami. So like, it is unusual on all sides. No matter how you look at it. But yeah, like, they had the field issues in Chicago, and thankfully the Chiefs got out of that okay for the preseason game. We all know what happened in Arizona. I'm just preparing people now.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I'm just preparing people now because for everything that this game can offer, Mecole Hardman needs to be healthy and available probably against the Las Vegas Raiders, who the Chiefs play in primetime on Monday Night Football on a normal playing surface and a division opponent. And, like,
then it's Buffalo after
that. Yeah. So, you want to have proper perspective. I know the Chiefs want to win this game. They do not want to go to back-to-back losses, but you have to be somewhat thought processing the long term. And this is where you might have to protect the player, because the player is like, hey, I'm on a contract year. I want to be out there all 17 games. I want to do what I can. If Mecole Hardman doesn't play, it's not his fault. It's just, hey, the game is about managing injuries to the best you can. And it's still early in the season, so he might not be out there. But if I'm able to get to Tampa, which I'm scheduled to go, and I'm able to go through the usual routines as best we all can from a TV production standpoint, obviously team, both coming basically from out of town at this point, then one of the biggest things that I'll do leading up to the game is just, how does the field look? How does, like, how are all these things working? Less than a week from a natural weather storm.
So with that all being laid out there now, I mentioned at the very beginning that Seth Kizer over in the Chief of the North newsletter wrote a really interesting piece where he went through 31 of the Chiefs, the Chiefs, all of their 31 failed offensive plays.
Woo!
31 is a lot. I am certainly not going to give you the step by step failed play by number here through the process. If you want that, you got to go check it out in the Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. He's always got a deal running there as well to get you 60% off forever. So that's the close up view. The 30,000 foot view takeaway here within it all is that there's no one single culprit, that a lot of things went wrong, from Andy Reid to Mahomes to the O-line to the receivers.
Yep.
None of that to say anything about the special teams. That is a totally different category that we've already talked about here today. Whenever you look at what this game brings, because I have spent most of these last couple of days not talking myself into the Chiefs, just sort of sitting back and thinking about it and really finding my argument for the Chiefs in this game to be pretty solid. Not like 100% by any means, but like feel okay about it when I'm eventually going to have to make a pick. But I hate this wide receiver injury report. I hate that. I hate that I can't assume that Orlando Brown and Trey Smith are any form of healthy as they stay on the injury report as well. Where do you begin to go through this game? I'll also add that the line in this game has moved from, at its best for Kansas City, 2.5. A 2.5-point favorite is what the Chiefs opened as. As you record this right now, most places have the Chiefs now getting 1 point as a 1-point underdog. The line there moving 3.5 points over a few days without there being any single piece of major news is pretty startling. That's a lot of line movement.
Yeah. It's really on the offensive line and Clyde. It don't matter wherever else you want to look, ladies and gentlemen. I know, Josh, that the wide receiver situation is not ideal. Mm-hmm. But you still have Juju Smith-Schuster and Travis Kelce. And, you know, Justin Watson. Sprinkle him in. Look, the offense was explosive when Clyde was effective both as a receiver and a runner. We have two game samples of that. We have one game where he was abysmal. So, from the running perspective, I guess he didn't get a ton of touches as a receiver. But he also hasn't had any drops or any issues of that nature. We about to find out how healthy this offensive line is or how unhealthy it is. So, I'm glad Andy on Wednesday acknowledged. Andy Reid said, yep, been bothering him when it comes to Orlando Brown and what I think is his left knee. You want to know how many points the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have given up per game this year, Josh?
The closest I've gotten to having an opinion on this game is that I think taking the under might be smart.
Yeah, it might be. They've given up 9 points per game. Now, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys didn't look like they had played a preseason game. So, all right. And then Dak got hurt in the game. All right. We all watched the game. It was horrible. Thanks, Sunday Night Football. Then they played the Saints. And, of course, we got the report before the game. Hey, y'all, Jameis is out here playing with backs. Like, what? Backs. Like, what do you mean? His backs hurts. He's got, like... He has multiple backs. Yep, they already injected him, so he has another one.
Chopped up into like four different bits right now. But don't worry, there's no risk of re-injury
whatsoever.
So are you sure? Look, I'm all about you know, getting that science and hearing from the doctors and then taking what the doctors say, because this is their area of expertise. I'm all about trying to hear from those doctors. But I have to question. I have to question the doctor who says, yes, his back is broken in multiple places and there's no risk for further injury playing football, playing NFL football. By the way, Jameis Winston has been missing practice in London this week, so we're about to export Andy Dalton upon our dear Londoners.
Oh my goodness, I did not know that. Oh,
welcome to American
Josh.
Football, baby.
Oh, line it up. Kirk Cousins, Andy Dalton. Oh,
truly, finally, just now, America's getting revenge on Britain.
Why do they do this to people? You know what they've given us? They've given us amazing soccer players. They've given us Emirata Kanu and...
they just lost their queen.
They give us Andy Murray. They give us. Why do they do this to us?
They just lost their beloved queen, and now if Jameis Winston isn't gonna play, they're going to have lost their king. I mean, it's just
it's so bad.
Royalty is falling. I mean, this is worse than the Boston Tea Party for them. I mean, Andy Dalton and Kirk Cousins getting exported to your shores might be a war crime. I mean, this is horrible. Someone's got to look into this. The UN needs to step in and stop Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins from being another data point that the Brits get on American football.
How can we best educate Britons about Tyrann Mathieu? How can we best go about this?
You know who shouldn't do it? Me.
How can we best, you know, inform people of like Justin Jefferson? You know, how can we move forward?
Those guys, there are some
other good football players on the field. We just want to acknowledge that. But also, Andy Dalton.
I was going to try to... I think Michael Thomas is still hurt, too. Hey.
Hey, he's good when healthy.
No, exactly. I'm just trying to figure out...
Alvin Kamara going to play?
I don't know.
Because he didn't play against the Bucks, and oh my... They had... Dog, they ran out. I got multiple back problems, Jameis Winston, and no Alvin Kamara. Why do we even line up, coach? Why?
This team lost to the Panthers last week.
Come on, coach.
And they did have Alvin Kamara against the Panthers.
They did have him against the Panthers, but against
good
the Bucks.
God.
But against the Bucks, it was. I don't even know. This tape is not serviceable to me to analyze either one of these teams. Now, look, they did get Aaron Rodgers without Sammy Watkins. And I don't think Christian Watson played last week either. But, like, hey, that's probably the best evidence that, hey, the defense is good. They held Aaron Rodgers and the Packers to 14 points, who also have better running backs right now. You know, between Mr. Aaron and Mr. Jones. Aaron Jones and Dylan. God, there's so many names, kids.
I was going to say Mr. Aaron and Mr. Jones. I thought, was that going to be, that might have been Rodgers and Aaron Jones. It was confusing. No. A lot of Aarons
and Mr. Dylan. Oh.
He just snuck in the Sammy Watkins thing, which if anybody didn't see, he's on IR with a hamstring injury, and it just makes me sad because I want is for Sammy Watkins to have hamstrings that don't betray him. Like, that's all I want anymore for him. So we'll see him play football, see if he can turn it around.
Yeah.
Just sad.
So, look, the defense is really good. They have very good linebacker play. I don't know. Like, it's hard to project because, like, the Buccaneers appear to have one of the better pass rushes. But, like, who they played? Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to project, all this is to say is, like, I completely understand why the line is fluctuating. You know, while also realizing that the Chiefs have the better quarterback. I presume the better coach. Yep. Don't turn the ball over. this is what we have to keep it simple, kids. Like, I can't give you anything that's, like, super glitzy. Now, last week, I told y'all, ain't none of these dudes getting open. And guess what? The Chiefs really didn't give up a big... They gave up, like, one long completion on a 50-50 ball when the Colts were deep in their back end. But look, I thought the Chiefs secondary would win that matchup. They, by and large, did, except for Jelani Woods being just 7 feet tall, which, hey, credit to him. But it was not the defense's fault on Sunday. God, no. It wasn't the defense's fault, but you know, there are certain matchups I can give you. Obviously, we talked about Darius Harris against Jonathan Taylor. That actually held up pretty well. You know, even though there was obviously some slight worries without Willie Gay. I mean, Russell Gage was out here getting 12 receptions, kids. You want to know how many yards, Josh?
Oh. Don't say...
Russell Gage led the team in with 12 receptions. Against the Green Bay Packers, who, by the way, are pretty good as well. 12 receptions for how many yards, sir?
I'm going to say 72.
He had 87 yards, guys.
Oh!
I mean, they're out here trotting out Cameron Brate, who, you know, is good when Rob Gronkowski's also on the field. Right. Or who's more of a legitimate option to take away some mismatches, you know, because... Obviously, playing next to a Hall of Famer does a lot of good. It's a hard game to, like... It's a hard game to estimate. Now, Julio Jones, he's got a knee situation. He's been limited the last two practices. Bashaud Perryman's got a knee and a hamstring. Doesn't look like he's going to play. He has not practiced this week. You know, Chris Godwin, who we all know is coming off the ACL, he's got a hamstring as well. We think he'll play... But it's clear he's not fully healthy. So take the under, as Josh suggests. There'll be like 8 turnovers, chaos among us, sloppy football, but like somehow there'll be, you know, 50 amount of points on the scoreboard between the two teams. But take the under.
5 total defensive special team scores for the two teams combined. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it'll get. Don't worry, kids. It'll get weird. We all know that.
Oh yeah, this game's gonna be played in a swamp, as you mentioned earlier. Like that will. Yeah. It'll be weird.
Well, like Tom Brady was 31 of 42 for a 6.5 yard average, dog. So a lot of this is rally, tackle, get a turnover if you can. But I don't know what your prediction is, Josh. I don't know if I even got one.
Me neither. No, I don't know. Either.
Honestly, we have to give one. They won't let us off the. They won't let us away from the microphone. You know, I want to keep our microphone. So we'll give the least confident projections or predictions of all time. But man, I don't know. Like, and neither do you.
No, here are my two things on each side of the ball that have kind of struck me here. Neither of these are necessarily helping me get to my end result. Just what struck me. One is that I wish the Chiefs defense was healthier, because I think oftentimes in the NFL you get a low scoring game and it's because there are two terrible offenses running into two okay defenses.
Mm-hmm.
If this defense has Trent McDuffie and Willie Gay and a healthy Mike Dana, I think it would legit just be a great defensive football game. Where, like, whenever Mahomes or Brady gets one over on you, it feels that way. It really is like, we got the one shot that we needed, and now this 7-point lead feels more secure than a 21-point lead felt in 2019. Like, that's kind of exciting as a possibility, but they don't have Willie Gay. They don't have Jim McDuffie. We don't know about Mike Dana yet. But Gay and McDuffie especially, that's going to be tough to function without, even though they still looked good against Indy. I just wanted to see them at full strength. The other half of it is that I don't really think the Buccaneers offense is anything to be terrified of right now, particularly with all the injuries you've rattled off. And, like, look, again, they're missing Mike Evans against Green Bay, and that didn't help. But this team has not looked like a well-oiled machine offensively at really any point. And I kind of think that's real. Like, I just kind of think that at least for a while that offensive line is still kind of a mess, I think they're going to get some slow, clunky, painful yards and enough points to make games difficult, because that defense is really good.
Yeah.
And that logic makes me want to side with the Chiefs, because I think the Chiefs' offense is better than that. But I also think the Buccaneers' defense at its current health, compared to the Chiefs' defense at its current health, I think the Buccaneers have that edge by a little bit. And if this game comes down to special teams, I would be a fool.
Toss up. Toss up at best.
So, I don't know, man. The wide receiver thing spooks me. The MVS and Hardman thing spook me. Where I think they can run this offense with one of those two guys. I don't know that they can do what they need to do without either of them. And if either of them are just simply, if neither of them are simply just healthy enough to really do what they need to do, that really hurts. I really don't know, man. I have, up until this last hour or so, before the injury report came out, I had been pushing myself closer and closer to, like, 21-17 Chiefs or something in that department. I'm starting to wonder if that's not where it needs to be. I don't know that I can talk myself into the Bucks breaking 24 themselves.
Mm-hmm.
First to 30 would 100% win. I just don't know. So I'm gonna make you land that first when I try to talk myself into something.
All right, here we go, kids. The Bucks' highest scoring game this year is 20 points against the Saints. So with that said, I'm gonna say Chiefs 23, Buccaneers 19. Now, remove special teams out of your mind.
Okay.
It's okay to go for it on fourth down. Conventionally.
Yes.
If you're on the plus side of the field, and even if it's in short yardage, which we've discussed in the previous episode, stats aren't good, but I think a little bit of aggression is healthy and okay for this particular game. And again, part of that is due to the opponent you're playing. Like, do we consider them to be at their most explosive? Well, if the answer to that is no, then you can take sort of measured aggression to try to get more cracks at the end zone. Red zone defense may be really, really interesting in this game, because you can move the football, but then once you get in the those condensed spaces, who can separate themselves? Like, this is a game where, like, you would hope Travis Kelce sort of plays better, particularly in the red zone. Obviously, I know he had a touchdown early in the game against the Colts, but that second touchdown that he could have and probably should have had, like, those are the type of plays you want to have in mind. So Kelce will be super duper important, much like he is in a lot of these games. I gave this earlier. I'm going to do it now, Josh. Are you ready?
I am incredibly ready.
His name is Matthew Wright. Yep. This is the first time I'm looking at this man, because unfortunately, and understandably, he was not in the locker room. I'm sure he was trying to get everything situated.
Trying to tell the equipment team what his shoe size is.
Now, last year, in some spot work, or no, in 2020, in some spot work with Pittsburgh, my man was serviceable. He was 4 for 4, 7 for 7 on extra points. Last year in Jacksonville, after the whole Urban Meyer situation.
Oh, yeah.
He had a career long of 56 yards. So he's got the leg. Dave Tobe said he was pretty consistent in the workout on Tuesday. They signed him. He's pretty good from 40 and in. So he's got a perfect percentage from 30 to 39. He's 5 of 6 from 40 to 49. 50 plus for any kicker is difficult. But he made 4 of 6 last year.
Do you think Harrison Butker is going to play?
No.
Can I give you my cookie theory?
To be fair, kids, I don't know. My best guess would probably be no. But Dave Tope said that they're going to take it all the way up to, you know, hey, Saturday. Because you have to decide if you're going to elevate Matthew Wright from the practice squad to the active roster so that he can play on Sunday.
And I wonder if there's any chance that they would activate two kickers for this game. Which I know is tough because that means you're taking a position group away from somewhere else. I don't know if this is a weird time to like just say, hey, no backup quarterback, Chad Henne, you're inactive. I don't think that will happen. But when Tobe said that, you know, I've got Mike Burton on the mind. I was reading Seth's article earlier. With Butker not practicing today, Tobe said it was because yesterday was the most kicking he had done since he got hurt.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure his ankle's a mess right now. I wonder if they could let somebody else handle kickoffs. And he didn't sound very amenable to the idea of Justin Reed doing kickoffs as a plan. But if Matthew Wright or maybe Justin Reed or whatever could do kickoffs, I wonder if Butker just doing the one step, just sledgehammer swing would not be this team's best kicking option. I don't know. It's totally different with adrenaline in game when it was hurt the first time to trying to get out to Tampa and find yourself some footing in what could be a swamp. I don't know. But that specific thing from Tobe today was sort of interesting. But, you know, not necessarily worth running out a dude on a bum ankle to use that ankle to land a whole bunch of his torquing energy. I wouldn't. I'm not saying that needs to happen. I'm just, I don't know. I was curious if you thought there was any chance. But maybe it's the Matthew Wright show, and we can be all right with that.
Right, and you know if that happens again, it's understandable. But hey, it might come down to Matthew Wright, and if that's the case, it'll be fascinating to see how he performs when he's only got a few days to get in sync with Tommy Townsend. And obviously, James Winchester, the long snapper. So, I don't know, Josh. I don't either, man. As I talked about, if that field don't look right, hey Matthew, you good? It's just, I don't know. We're
gonna be dumb. I can feel it. I'm just gonna say a score so I don't have to think about it anymore. I'm just gonna say, I just want to say 20-17 and then not give a team, but I don't think that I trust the Chiefs to hit two field goals, so that math doesn't necessarily work. So I'm gonna say that it's 3 touchdowns and a missed extra point or a failed 2-point conversion or something, and I'm just gonna say 20-17. Chiefs, because I'm a sucker. And what it actually is that the game is tied. The Chiefs have just barely crossed midfield, and there's 2 seconds left on the clock. They didn't get as close as they wanted to, but then Harrison Butker comes limping off the sideline, dragging his club foot like Daniel Day-Lewis, and just kicks a 60-yard bomb to win it. 60 might be too far, but, you know, a nice 52-yarder that he comes out there and has his real Kirk Gibson moment.
Yeah. Sure.
Another Kirk Gibson moment, maybe? I think he's already had a couple now. I don't know.
Sure. Let's see it all the way home, kids.
It's going to be weird, man. This game's going to be very, very strange.
So weird.
I'll let you pack us up and get us out of here because we talked about it. Hey, without Seth, dude, is this show going to make it a full hour today? Oh, we're over an hour. Okay. Well, I just looked over and saw the time and okay. So you can read Seth's excellent story about what went wrong in Indianapolis on the Chief of the North newsletter. That's mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Of course, all of Nate's stuff up on The Athletic. The article, we didn't talk about this nearly in depth enough. I apologize. This has just been two full days ago, I think, and so I deleted too much of it from my mind. Your story about the Chiefs in short yardage, we talked about, we teased some of that. I tell you what, I imagine that this will be a continuing issue next week and beyond. I do want to dig into that with you at some point. Total game mismanagement by me here. You know, I got to be better. That starts with me. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the challenge of doing this show after Chiefs Buccaneers on Monday. Cause I do want to dig into that as well. So that's up in The Athletic, and you're writing about special teams as well.
Yeah. Sometimes the trends, you write them right as they're at their peak. And, you know, so for Chiefs fans, you hope that, like, as I write this, it's gonna naturally go back to like what they were last year, which is like a very good team in short yardage. So maybe there'll be new plays. Who knows? If not, then that'll sort of exasperate the issues with the offensive line. Lastly, I forgot to do this Monday because that game was so bat bleep crazy that I forgot to give a shout out. And I told you and Seth this the night it happened. It was Saturday night in Indianapolis. But I just want to give a quick shout out because, you know, where we are in the season. I want to say thank you and hello again to Cassandra and her family, who were all decked out in Purdue gear. I mean, they were so excited to see George Karlaftis play for the Chiefs in Indiana, you know, basically his home state since he became an American, against the Colts. And they recognized me in my all juice, you know, hoodie, which is in honor of Therese Paylor. She enjoyed his work as well. So it was super sweet. It's not every day where either one of us are on the road or whatever, and somebody recognizes us and says that they love the podcast. But yeah, if you've listened this far, God bless you. Hope you enjoyed the weather report. And yeah, just thank you to Cassandra. Cassandra, I can't get anybody's name right. There's so many names, kids. Cassandra, I appreciate you.
A real Nate Taylor Times R's shout out includes him getting your name wrong just a little bit. That right there is maybe the most authentic shout out you've ever given.